Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Eerie House Radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show. I am accompanied by
Dave Bacon for Wayne's Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One starting up again for a Robbie for a whole season on Bat TV. And we're here with,
yay,
I am glad to report the gulp is working. It is I, Garth the Ghoul. Blah, blah. There you go.
There you go. Thank you for joining us and good night. No, wait, there's more.
Yeah, yes.
Lots more.
Tune in to your local station. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm a little bit foggy tonight.
Are you now?
Yeah.
I haven't the foggiest clue what you're talking about.
Well, why, I'm talking about our programming tonight, of course. We're kind of a little foggy. All our stories are in the mists, so to speak. Like us gorillas.
In the mist.
Yeah.
Like the gorillas.
Like us gorillas, yes.
So,
yeah,
we
got
bananas.
We're all over the spectrum in as far as genres. We got what? The Whistler? The Whistler? Suspense?
The Whistler?
The Whistler?
The Whistler,
yep,
so yes.
Suspense.
Suspense and the Goon Show.
The Goon Show.
Always a lot of fun. It's just like listening to Monty Python in a way.
Monty Python, many of those guys
say
that, yeah, many guys say the Python guys and others say how much that the Goon Show influenced them. What's funny, one of the characters in there, Eccles, was based on Mortimer Snerd. Across the pond there.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Ah. So we'll get to enjoy that one. Maybe we ought to save that one for the last. We'll end with some yucks tonight. What do you think?
Okay. All right. Sure.
Okay.
We'll start off serious and suspenseful and wistily. And Fogs Bane and good old Bob join us. One of them is teached in the head. Catched. I thought it was catched. He's catched. I don't know.
Catched.
Maybe he went to college and he was teached.
Taught.
I don't, taught I don't know.
To teach. Yeah, yeah.
Was there a Jarvis Tetch? Who is Tetch?
Tetch. Tex Avery.
There is a Jarvis Tetch. Who is he? The Mad Hatter. Oh, okay. All right.
That came out of nowhere.
It did. It did. I was like, what is Tetch? Wait, who is that? It's Batman, of course. The Mad Hatter. His name was Jarvis Tetch. And sidebar, out of all the 1966 villains, David Wayne doing the Mad Hatter was just hilarious. Now, I'll get you, Batman. It was hilarious. Anyway.
Whole lot of radio. Oh, bunches and bunches and bunches of it.
Bunches and bunches and bunches.
That's right.
Sorry. I got stuck there.
Yeah.
Well, at least the goat survived surgery. I'm glad to hear.
So do you guys get a lot of fog in Florida?
We do. Because why? Florida is a swamp. They imported dirt from other parts of the United States to make Florida habitable.
We get periods, I guess partly from being near the lake and just a lot of lakes around and stuff, and the temperature difference. We get some terrible fogs you can't even drive in.
Is it called lake effect fog? I'm just curious.
I haven't
so
heard
much.
It called that, but I'm sure it is. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It should be called that from now on. There we go.
All right. For you, we'll do
let's
it.
Let's make it a
lake
law.
Effect fog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, if you can get lake effect snow, you can get lake effect fog.
Why not?
Why not?
Cleveland gets everything.
I remember
one more thing.
I used to work in Brunswick, living here in Akron, and there was one night coming home on Route 71. It was so foggy, I didn't even see the Medina exit. Had to go clear down to 224 and back up asshole because I missed the exit because it was so foggy I couldn't even see the lighted exit.
And what is it about fog that is so spooky?
I think it's the mystery that you driving, can't see through it. You know what I mean?
It's, you can't,
you don't know what's lurking
like
in
gonna,
it.
Yeah, something's going to get you. Yeah.
If you're lucky.
I enjoy it. And we have something here called Spanish moss. And if you've got Spanish moss hanging in the trees and you've got the fog, forget about it. There's the backdrop for a horror movie. Go look at the Universal Classics. They've got trees,
yes,
hanging moss, and fog. And it's spooky. Delicious.
But on the other hand, Spanish moss does give you a good salad.
Yeah, it's filled with a bug that would drive the inside of your mouth insane.
A bug?
They are called C-H-I-G-G-E-R, chiggers, and they get into and under your skin and make you itch madly.
I think somebody
nasty.
Got that in the service, got the chiggers.
And they're embedded in Spanish moss. They live there. I don't know why.
Mm. How wonderful.
Yeah. So if you ever made a salad out of Spanish moss, you'd get an extra surprise.
Nice bonus.
Yeah, no thanks.
Extra protein. No.
But it looks amazing on a tree. If you see it on a tree and it's foggy, ooh, it's so spooky.
Yep. It sets the tone for our radio programs tonight. Where shall we begin?
I thought you said suspense. So
why
dispense?
Not? Let us not suspense any further and start with suspense. A good title on this one, The Man in the Fog.
There you go.
And I don't know.
That kind of gives it away, huh?
Probably.
We have an
kind of gives it away there, yeah.
Probably have an original broadcast date for this baby, I would think.
What's that do?
How about 24/1961?
And now, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. A man walks in the fog, and a woman dies. Terror grips the city, and the police are helpless. For the murders are without pattern and apparently without motive. Listen now to Act One of The Man in the Fog, starring Robert Dryden and Ethel Everett, written especially for Suspense by Joseph Cochran.
It's horrible. Think of it, Ben. 3, now 4, ripped with a knife and left in the gutter.
Now, don't take on so, Mamie.
Alive 1 minute, a clawing corpse the next. Why don't the police do something?
I don't know why. Why don't they?
They're at their wits' end is why. They do think it's a working man, though.
Why? But that's like them, to blame a poor working man for anything that happens.
Says the killings always happen on weekends, so they guess the one who's doing it is working the other days.
If they're so smart, why don't they catch him?
Well, they don't really know. Anyhow, they're doubling the night force on weekends until he's caught.
Maybe he's too smart to get caught.
And they're asking everyone to help, and the newspaper's offering a reward. It's right here.
Hmm?
This paper will pay £500 to any person who offers a clue which leads to the arrest and conviction of the monster who holds the city in terror.
Monster? That's what they're calling a poor working man.
Oh, what I could do with £500. I'd get a new oilcloth for the table and paint the kitchen, maybe a new sink, and then
ain't got it, so stop thinking of all the things you'd spend it for.
Supposing we could give the police an idea which would lead them to this killer.
Where would you get an idea? You don't know anything about this sort of thing.
I didn't get it from you, of that you can be sure.
All right. What's this idea?
Why should I tell you when all you ever did was to make fun of me when I tried to win a little money for us?
Now, them puzzle contests. You spent a lot of time and never won a thing. This is different. What's your idea?
I'm not sure I'm going to tell you.
It ain't right to keep things from your husband.
You keep things from me.
What things?
You don't tell me where you go on Saturdays and Sundays.
Can't a man take a walk without his wife say so? Now, you tell me
or I'll... You don't need to shout at me. I was going to tell you all along, but you turned up your nose at the idea of getting some money. Here, look at this map.
So? It's a map of the city. What about it?
See them four crosses?
Yes.
Well, each one marks the spot where a woman was killed. And when you connect them up, it makes an almost perfect square.
Anybody can make a square like that.
Put that map flat on the table and I'll show you something.
All right, now it's on the table. Now what?
Well, here's where my idea comes in. Whoever's doing the killing lives inside that square.
Oh, my sweet, there's over a million people living inside that square.
But the killer goes in a different direction each time.
How do you know that?
Well, it just stands to reason he's not going to kill a woman in front of his own house. He takes a different direction so as not to have two happen in the same place.
Suppose he does live inside the square. How are the police to know
Wait
whether or not...
Wait a minute. That's where the rest of my idea comes in. I take a ruler and I draw two diagonal lines connecting the opposite corners like this.
What's that for?
He most likely lives close to where them two lines cross.
I can't make out any names on this map.
Now, let's see. This line comes along and it crosses... Dan.
What's the matter?
The lines. Then the lines cross right here in our own block. Then maybe it's someone we pass on the street every day.
What are you doing here? Come on, dearie, get up. This is no place to be sleeping. Come on, get up. Here, I'll give you a hand. Mother in heaven!
Ben, it's happened again, right here in our room block.
What are the lights on for?
Just like all the others, dead and lying in the gutter.
Turn off them lights, they cost money.
I'm scared, didn't you hear me? Your wife's been here all alone, dying with fear. Don't you know there's been a murder almost on our doorstep?
Oh, quit screeching, I know it.
You do? Well, how do you know if...
No, police are all over the place. They stopped me coming home and wanted to know who I was and what I was doing.
Why are you running the water this time of morning?
Don't you see? I'm washing my hands.
Seems to me you could wash up at the factory.
Oh, shut up. Can't a man make himself clean without his wife yelling at him?
Who's yelling? It's you they can hear all over the house.
Yes, yes, yes. All right, Mamie, there's no sense in shouting at each other. I'm done in. Give me some brandy.
Brandy? This time of the morning?
Get it. And don't give me any jaw.
Now you've got to have brandy when you get home. To quiet your tender nerves, I suppose. Here. Heaven knows after what's happened, it's me that needs it.
That's the stuff. Oh, Mamie, you do. Done in. You better take one.
Well, just a drop.
This time it didn't happen on a weekend.
No, it didn't.
So, maybe it ain't a working man after all.
I didn't say it was. It was the police's idea.
And what about your fancy idea of him going in a different direction each time?
Well, I don't know what to think now.
Maybe you ain't so smart after all. Maybe you better tend to the housework and forget about rewards.
I'm going to bed. Well, are you coming?
Yeah. I'll be along in a minute.
Why, ain't you the fancy one?
What's that?
You just got through washing your hands, so don't you remember?
No, I didn't.
Pauly.
Oh, yes, Mr. Britt.
Anything resembling a clue in those letters?
Oh, they're the usual stuff.
6 confessions, plenty of advice on how to catch him.
Yes, sir. What's that one?
Oh, that's from a Mrs. Ben Cast. She notices that if you connect the 4 murder locations, it forms a square.
A big help. Everyone, including the police, noticed that.
And she's got the idea the killer must live where the 2 diagonals cross. It's the date that made me put it aside.
Oh, let me see that. Yeah, mailed on the 24th, night of the last murder.
Yes, and it took place within 100 feet where the lines cross on the map, sir. Of course, it could be coincidence.
Could be. Well, we'll have to make a routine call on Mrs. Cast.
Are you the timekeeper?
That's right. What can I do for you?
My husband forgot his lunch. Could you see it was sent in to him?
All right. What's his name?
Cast. Ben Cast. He works in the grinding shed.
He didn't check in tonight.
You mean he's not here?
Here's his card. It's not punched.
But he left home at the regular time.
Maybe he's out with a blonde.
But Ben never misses work. He's never stayed away before. As
he's pretty regular. He missed work only once before this month. Before tonight, I mean.
Once before? When was that?
Well, let's see. Here it is. Wednesday, the 24th.
The 24th?
Yes.
Wednesday. No. No, it can't be. That was the night of the...
Here it is. That time clock doesn't lie.
Good Lord.
I say, what's the matter?
Nothing. I'm all right.
You don't look like it, Mrs. Cast. You better take the bus home. You shouldn't be out alone in this fog with that fellow still at large. I guess you know what I mean.
Ben, is that you?
Of course it's me.
Has there been another?
Don't pester me with questions. I'm done in.
I walked in. If you're looking for the brandy, it's on the table.
Hello, Cast. I see you brought your lunch tonight.
I got to eat, don't I?
The other night when you forgot it, your wife brought it down. That's the night you didn't check in.
She was here?
Yes.
You told her I didn't come to work?
What else could I tell her? If you wanted me to cover for you, you should have let me know.
Well, good night, Mrs. Cass. Sorry to have bothered you, but the police have to make a check of every letter, and we do appreciate your desire to help catch this murderer.
Good night, sir.
Good night.
What do you think, sir?
Oh, she's a very frightened woman.
I can't blame her. First a murder, a stone's throw away, then the police drop in.
Yes, better run a check on her husband just to be on the safe side. You know where he works and all that sort of thing.
Who's there? Oh, Ben. What are you doing home? Don't. You're hurting my arm.
A minute my back's turned, you call the police.
No, Ben, they came to ask me about the letter. It don't mean a thing. They said so. They just had to check all the letters. They get dozens of them.
What did you tell them?
Nothing. Honest. There was nothing I could tell them.
They asked about me, didn't they?
I had to tell them I was married and that you worked nights.
Did they ask you about Wednesday night?
No, they didn't ask. What Wednesday? Then please let go my arm.
The night you brought my lunch to the factory. The night you left the brandy out for me.
I knew you'd be tired after working hard all night. It's good when you're tired. Let me get your glass now.
Wednesday, you followed me. You left the brandy. You know, don't you?
I don't know anything, Ben. I don't want to know. You don't have to tell me where you go or what you do, Ben. Ben, you're hurting me. I'll never ask again.
You said I was a monster. You want me to get caught so you can get the money?
No, Ben, I don't want the money. I tore the map up. It was a crazy idea. Didn't mean anything. The men said so.
You put them on my trail. They'll go to the factory, they'll ask questions. They'll be after me like hound dogs, sniffing and baying at my heels because of you. All because of you.
Ben, please, please listen to me. Put down the knife.
It's all up with me because of you. But I'll finish you just like I've finished all the others.
Ben, listen. Ben, you need me now more than you ever did. But Ben, I can help you. I'm the only one who can help you. Throw them off the scent.
You led them to me. How are you going to lead them away?
You need someone to swear you was home all those nights you didn't go to work. Don't you see, Ben? I'm the only one who can do that. Suppose they ask where you were those nights.
I'll say I was at home.
But they won't believe you. Not unless you have someone to back you up. You've got to have an alibi.
Alibi?
Someone who'll say you couldn't be near the place the time it happened.
Yeah. Not going to snitch on me?
No, Ben. Never. I'll never tell. Please put away the knife.
Well, maybe I will. Maybe I won't.
Got to let me live, because without an alibi, they'll hang you.
You'll say I was at home those nights?
I'll swear it. Who else can do that for you? Ben, you're tired. Let me get you some brandy.
Yeah, brandy. That's what I need. Get it.
Yes, sir. Brandy's dandy. Liquor's quicker, and I guess water doesn't rot.
I'll drink
something.
How drink to that?
There you go, Foster Brooks, ladies and gentlemen. Foster Brooks.
Yes, I would Foster Brook you.
I don't think I've ever had brandy nor scotch.
I tried scotch once. I thought it was horrible.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I thought
maybe
it was.
Maybe it's an acquired taste. I don't know.
So for someone who can drink 151 Ron Rico, scotch was horrible.
Never tried it.
I've had vodka before. That's a
hard experience. I've had
hard
a vodka,
experience.
But I wouldn't eat. But I wouldn't eat the worm. I had vodka, but I wouldn't eat the worm, no.
That's tequila.
That's tequila.
No, that's tequila. Yeah. I have had vodka in vodka Collins. Yes.
Vodka Burns.
They have designer
going
vodkas
down,
now.
Coming back up.
Like fruit flavor and stuff. Yeah. They do.
Oh, my God. That's horrible.
It is. The very idea. It's supposed to taste horrible.
It's supposed to. It
keeps kids away
from
it.
It comes from a place. Yeah.
Something.
It reinforces where it comes from. That's how I understood it. Yeah,
okay. Well, I think vodka comes from potatoes, if I'm not mistaken.
I think it comes from Russia. That's what I meant.
Same thing.
Potatoes in Russia, same thing? Okay.
Yeah. There might be Russian potatoes, but I couldn't understand their language.
That's
especially
right.
After four or five shots.
Oh,
but after six shots,
watched.
I could speak Russian. Yeah.
That's true, too. Yeah.
Hold on.
That is true,
Jeez. Oh, if we weren't being listened to, we are now.
Remember, kids, don't drink and drive a podcast, you know?
Yeah, don't. Be safe.
This is a good episode of suspense. I am enjoying where this is going. Because at first it was like, she's done. He's going to take her out. And she wheedled him into keeping her alive a little while longer.
Yeah.
It also will invest in laws that probably are no longer on the books. We'll find out. About testimony in a court, they make mention of that, which that was a weird safeguard they put in there about that. and we'll find out about it in just a few minutes.
You know, there's kind of a misnomer to that, too. We can talk about that after the show. But there's a misnomer to that.
What I'm alluding
to. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Well, nobody wants to be misnomed.
Yeah.
Well, it's too cold
not
there.
Even
I don't blame
gnomes.
Them.
Yeah.
It's
too cold there. I don't blame them. Yeah, yeah.
Well, they have the vodka to keep them warm.
Yes.
Yeah, so.
And they always have potatoes to eat if they get hungry. So there you go.
Yeah, that's it. Mm-hmm. Why eat your potatoes when you can drink them? I guess.
Same thing with corn. Corn mash.
Yeehaw. Yeah. Yeah.
Let's wrap
up. You can put it in your gas tank. Yeah, there you go.
There you go. Let's wrap up suspense. And we'll be in a fog by the time we get back if we can keep consuming beverages at Erie House Radio.
Well, here's the picture, Hawley. For a time, the murders took place on weekends. Then they stop, but take place in the middle of the week.
And on Wednesday, the 24th, Cass doesn't report for work. First time in 6 years. 2 weeks later, Cass misses work again. And there's another murder.
Yes, he's our man, all right. But proving it, it's another matter.
There hasn't been another since we questioned him.
Oh, he'll try again. It's only a matter of time.
Do you really think so, sir?
Oh, sure of it.
But assuming it is Cass, wouldn't he be a fool to try again?
Whoever it is, he can't help himself. He'll try again and again until he's caught.
And all we can do is stand by and wait for it to happen again.
That's it. We know that it'll happen. We know how it'll happen. But we don't know when and we don't know where. What does the weatherman say?
Heavy fog rolling in, sir.
Chilly enough without opening the window and filling the room with a damp fog.
Thick, heavy fog. I can't see the corner light.
Close the window.
I like the smell of cool, wet fog.
Then ain't it time you started for work? Ben.
Huh? What'd you say?
It's time you started for work.
I'm not going tonight.
Not going? What's come over you?
I don't like the factory on nights like this.
You'll stay in, Ben, won't you? If you don't go to work.
The walls press in on me. I want to walk in the cool, wet fog. It's all about one, but it doesn't press in. It's a wall all round, but it gives way as I walk into it.
No. Now stay home if you wish, but don't go walking in the fog.
He'll call the factory and tell them I'm not coming in.
Then please, if I call them, will you promise not to...
Do as I say!
All right, I'll go phone. I'll be right back. Hello? I'm calling for Ben Cast. He's sick and he won't be in tonight. No, not serious. He'll be in tomorrow night. Yes, tomorrow. Ben, I got the timekeeper. Ben, why have you got your slicker on? You promised me you'd never walk in the fog again.
There's someone out there calling me.
You're talking wild.
It's my mission. There's a soul out there begging to be released from the claws of the flesh so as it can soar up to heaven.
Ben, don't...
Get out of my way!
Mr. Britt, you've got to put him away.
He'll kill me if he knows I came to
you. Mrs. Cast, we can't use anything you've told us in court because a wife cannot testify against her husband.
But he killed him. I know it.
And then again, he never actually confessed it to you. All we've got is that each time he missed work, there was a murder.
What are we going to do now?
Well, first, I've got to get a confession out of him.
He'll never do that. After I talked him out of killing because he needed an alibi, he's become more sure of himself than ever.
Woman for his alibi. Well, you wait, Mrs. Cast. I've ordered him brought in.
You'll not let him see me, will you?
That, depends. Mr. Cast, on Wednesday the 24th, there was a murder not far from your home.
Everybody knows that.
Yes, and, on Wednesday the 24th, you missed work for the first time in 6 years.
No, I didn't feel well, so I stayed home.
And 2 weeks later, there was another murder. You missed work a second time in 6 years.
Man can get sick, can't he?
2 hours ago, a woman was killed. And the third time in 6 years, you didn't report for work. Where were you 2 hours ago, Mr. Cast?
I was at home.
And those other nights, where were you?
Home?
Well, I'm glad to hear that. You understand, though, we can't just take your word for it. Now, if there was someone who could testify for you...
You mean if I had an alibi?
Exactly.
Well, I have got an alibi. My wife will swear I was home those nights.
But, she's a woman, Mr. Cast.
She'll swear to it.
But you know how sneaky women are, how they'll lie their heads off, what traps they set for men.
Yes, I know.
Yes, they'll swear not to do something, and a moment later, they'll do the opposite.
But Mamie said she wouldn't do...
She's a woman, Mr. Cast. Don't forget how greedy they are. And there's a reward out for the killer.
Yes. Mamie wanted the reward.
Ben, I'm going to tell you something. Just between you and me, understand?
I'm not to tell anybody else.
Right. I hate women, too.
Oh, yes?
Those women who got the knife in the fog, they all had it coming to them.
Yes. They had it coming to them.
Look, Ben, I want to show you something. Now, who's that woman talking to my man?
Mamie. And he's writing down what she says.
As I said, you can't depend on them.
Well, Mamie, she's my alibi. What will I do? She's the only one who can swear where I was those nights.
Tell me, Ben, because I understand. Now, tell me where you really were those nights. Tell me how you walked in the cool, wet fog that formed a blanket all around you. Tell me how a dim figure of a woman would come out of the fog. How your hand would go to the knife. The knife. Ben?
The knife? Yes. You do understand things. You do understand me. My hand would go to the knife all by itself. It would take it. I could hear a soul wailing in the body of a woman, begging to be freed from the claws of the flesh. And then my hand would lift the knife, and in a minute, the soul would be free. And then my head would stop hurting.
Suspense.
You've been listening to The Man and the Fog, starring Robert Dryden and Ethel Everett, and written especially for Suspense by Joseph Cochran. Suspense is produced and directed by Bruno Zerato Jr. Music supervision by Ethel Huber. Also featured in tonight's story were Mercer McLeod, Lawson Zerbe, and Guy Rep. Listen again next week when we return with No Hiding Place, written by William N. Robeson. Another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. They sing, too. Carol Burnett and Richard Hayes, weeknights on the CBS Radio Network.
Chevrolet spotlights the news. Chevrolet, in behalf of your local authorized Chevrolet dealer, who invites you to see the new 1962 Chevrolets on Friday, September 29th, brings you Alan Jackson with the latest news from the CBS newsroom.
The president is conferring with his advisors in New York. The attorney general had a word on nuclear weapons. The stories in a moment. After a word from Chevrolet.
May I help you, sir?
Oh, yes. I'd like to see some of those 62 Chevrolet cars.
I'm afraid you're a bit early, sir.
Hmm?
The new 62 Chevrolets and Corvairs won't be shown to the public until September 29th.
September 29th?
Yes, sir. That's the day we Chevrolet dealers unveil the 62 Chevrolets, Corvairs,
but,
and the totally new...
Could you show me a picture of what they look like? What they look like?
Not until September 29th.
Oh, that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous.
Oh, sorry, sir, but I'm afraid you'll just have to wait until Friday, September 29th.
Well, baby, maybe you could tell me something about them. Something about them.
Well, the new 1962 Chevrolets and Corvairs are absolutely beyond description. And the totally new line of cars...
Yes?
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. You'll just have to wait until September 29th.
But mating, waiting makes me no service. So nervous. Couldn't you...
Not until Friday, September 29th. Friday, September 29th.
Are you trying to fake money, me?
Two more names have been added to the meeting President Kennedy is having in New York this evening. Arthur Dean, who headed our delegation at the disarmament talks, and John McCloy, the president's advisor on disarmament, were called in to join Secretary Rusk and Ambassador Stevenson in a preview of the speech the president will deliver to the U.N. General Assembly tomorrow.
Adelaide,
he flew down from Cape Cod a little over an hour ago. The Russians, in a memo to the U.N. on the eve of the opening of the new General Assembly session, reasserted that they will unconditionally accept any Western proposals for control measures if the West will first accept Premier Khrushchev's program for general and complete disarmament. The president's brother, Attorney General Robert Kennedy, in a broadcast interview, said there is no question that the president would use nuclear weapons, if necessary, to save the freedom of Berlin. If we retreat at Berlin, he said, we will never be able to stand up again. Democratic Senator Mike Mansfield says there are some things in the Berlin crisis which can be negotiated, things which don't affect the freedom of West Berlin or the security of the free world. And he said that de facto recognition of the East German communists might well be inevitable. There have already been angry protests by some West Germans at the idea of any form of recognition, but Mansfield pointed out that the West Germans themselves already recognize East Germany in one form, that is, more than $300 million worth of trade agreements every year. The communists of Berlin are still having trouble keeping their reluctant citizens out of the West, despite the new concrete wall, barbed wire, and other barricades along the city dividing line. At least 20 East Berliners escaped to freedom during the day by jumping out of windows, scrambling through barbed wire, and climbing over the wall, and some made their way into the western side of town by digging a tunnel through the wall of a stable on the border. Three Air Force servicemen were killed in the crash of an Air Force transport plane in Wilmington, North Carolina. The plane had just taken off with newsmen and members of the skydiving parachute team preparing to jump for an air show down below. It stalled on takeoff and crashed on the edge of the field in full view of the spectators and a TV audience watching over the local TV station. 11 other persons aboard the plane were injured. Death came to a career diplomat at his home in New Jersey. Sumner Wells, a former Undersecretary of State, died at the age of 68. The exact cause of his death was not announced. It was Wells who coined the phrase good neighbor policy in describing our attitude toward the nations of Latin America. Argentina's President Frondizi is on his way to New York, where he'll meet with President Kennedy Tuesday morning. And there are hints in Rio that Brazil's new President Goulart would be pleased to accept an invitation to visit the President in Washington. And so-called informed sources are suggesting that such an invitation likely will be sent within the next few weeks. That's the news.
So.
Now a word from Chevrolet.
This is Art Baker speaking for Chevrolet in behalf of your local authorized Chevrolet dealer, who invites you to see the new 1962 Chevrolets coming Friday, September 29th.
Remember, Chevrolet brings you the news 12 times each weekend on CBS Radio.
Yes, sir, and you're listening to Erie House Radio. Yep. Aren't you?
Yep. Yep.
Erie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
When eating pea soup, it lasts a lot longer if you use a fork.
Okay. But some soups are so chunky, you can eat it. You're tempted to eat them with a fork, but don't.
Some. Not pea soup, but yeah, some.
Yeah. Not pea soup.
Not pea soup.
Pea soup
is best. Pea soup is best eaten with chopsticks, actually.
And lots of pork.
Yeah.
I usually use a straw.
Use a straw, yeah. Works for me.
If you're going to have pea soup, you got to have a bunch of pork. Bacon, something. Anyway, that was an interesting tale from suspense.
Maybe a cheese sandwich, maybe, with the pea soup.
Yeah. Oh,
good. Right. And it included that wives could not testify against their husbands.
I thought the rule, the law was they could not be compelled to testify.
Well, that, you know what?
That's
what I believe to be. However, this was over in England, so maybe in England they cannot testify against their husbands. But here, you cannot be forced to testify against your husband. But go ahead and do it if you want.
That's it.
They're not going to believe the dude anyway.
That's a law of the times, isn't it?
Yep.
Not being able to testify against your spouse, or that's just rough.
Yeah. 17,000 divorces later, they determined that maybe.
I'm pretty sure that
there should be some testifying going on. Yep.
That law has since been rescinded, but what was it? What was the date of this thing?
Seems a lot of them have.
61, I think.
61, yeah. So 61, we didn't have seat belts in all the cars, and women couldn't testify against their husbands.
And we had jarts.
Jarts, yeah.
Yeah, we had long darts.
Yeah.
I wonder how much of the population that took out.
Natural selection, baby. Natural selection.
I'm telling you, it says Darwin right on the box.
Yep.
Right?
Could be, yeah.
Those should have come with a Darwin Award in the box. I think that would have been handy.
Darwin Award included.
Yeah, you know.
What are your Erie House charts?
Yeah. And remember the clacker balls?
Those clacker balls.
That should have come with a Darwin Award too.
My neighbor had some of those, and he's actually kind of chipped apart even. You know, so not only was it, if you got your hand in there, you smack it, but if you get it, it's clacking hard enough, you can chip those little balls away, and the pieces are flying all over the place.
Yeah, that was one of the contentions, was that they would break and shatter, and that was bad. But made for an amazing bolo or a defensive weapon if you ever clock someone in the head with one of those. not good.
See, I always made sure my kids wore goggles when I handed over the welding torch.
Oh, well, there you go. That's a good one.
Good dad you were.
Safety first.
An award for that. Safety first. That's right. That's right.
D. Miller 910 says he loved the clacker balls and used them for a bolo.
Wow, D. Miller's here.
Yep.
D. Miller's one of the Horrible Horror regulars.
Yeah, he's joining us here today.
Hello, D. Miller. Blah, blah. If things go well, there will be something.
As is Fogg's Bane, good old Bob.
They both hang out. They drop by. And it's appreciated.
It certainly is, by us as well. Let's go on to the Whistler.
We need some whistling.
If you whistled that much, you'd have to walk by night too.
Yes.
Why in the world did the inventors of language put a T in that word?
For me, so I could say whistle.
So you could whistle while you work. Yeah. Okay. Sure. Yeah.
There you go. Hey, no Disney here. The man from. The last one was Man from in the Fog. This one's The Man from Calais. Kalu Kalu.
All right.
Yep.
It is.
And this one was. Yep. And this one was originally broadcast way back. Oh, I'd say about.
Before women had the vote back in February 7th, 1954.
The Whistler.
Maybe in England.
Yeah, maybe.
Presented by the United States Air Forces in Europe.
I am the Whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
Whistler will continue, and the reader will close with a final reminder about Armed Forces Day 1966. Get your copy of The Airman at your USAFE base and pass it along to the next reader.
And now, the Whistler's strange story, Man from Calais.
Night, and a thick gray blanket of fog had descended over the city. As Laura Ames, former American, now of London, hurried along the deserted residential street, she stopped occasionally, glanced over her shoulder and listened, and then hurried on again, certain that the unseen footsteps she'd been hearing in the gray fog behind her were those of someone deliberately following her. As she turned into Delavan Square and broke into a half run, Laura was trembling with fright. And you have good reason to be frightened, haven't you, Laura? You have had for 2 days. When you finally reach the steps of your rooming house, you fumble frantically in your purse. House keys, Laura. You couldn't have lost them. But you don't seem to have them. And back there in the fog, the footsteps coming closer and closer.
Dearie.
Oh, Mrs. Reeves. Thank goodness.
Oh, you're so late coming home from the office.
Oh, yes. There were some last-minute letters to get out.
Dear me, I was becoming quite worried. All this fog and what with that killer wandering around the street. Why, dearie, you're shivering.
Oh, I'll be all right.
Here, let me fix you some tea.
Oh, no, don't bother.
You're going out?
Yes, but not alone, mind you. My son Frank and his wife are taking me to the cinema. Only take me a moment to fix your tea.
Oh, thank you, Mrs. Reeves. I'll manage.
Oh, that must be Frank now. Yes, there's his car.
Well, you run along.
Well, ta-ta.
Yes, Laura, there's a killer loose somewhere in the city of London. And the police are certain he's already claimed three lives. The last victim being young Mr. Pomeroy, a boarder in this very house, who met his death only two nights ago on a quiet side street close to where you live. You hurry into the kitchen, turn the gas on under the kettle, place the tea things on a tray and carry them back into the parlor. Then suddenly you stop and the tray slips from your hand. A man, Laura, standing in the hallway, a stranger.
Oh, I'm dreadfully sorry. I didn't mean to startle you.
Who are you? What?
Name's Follett. C.J. Follett.
How did you get in here?
Key. I'm a new boarder. I moved in this afternoon.
Oh.
I feel much better now. Nothing like a brisk cup of tea after an evening stroll.
Oh, I agree. Funny, I never cared much for tea until I came to England. Wouldn't have anything else now.
You're American, aren't you?
Yes. From upstate New York.
Been in England long?
Since the war, and I love it. Especially London and this house.
Yes. Too bad about Mr. Pomeroy, wasn't it?
Yes. It was quite a shock to all of us.
Yes, I dare say. Happened close by, as I understand.
In St. Margaret's Mews. Naturally, we've all been a bit on edge. When are they going to catch this fiend?
Oh, but they have, haven't you heard?
What?
Yes, came over the BBC about an hour ago. Police caught the chap in a hotel over in the West End.
Oh, thank goodness. Are they certain he's the one?
Oh, quite. He confessed to the crime. That is, except a lot. He denies killing your Mr. Pomeroy.
Oh, but surely the police don't believe that.
Oh, yes, they do. You see, they've definite proof he was holed up in that hotel room the past 4 days and nights. And Mr. Pomeroy was killed only two nights ago.
I see.
Now it seems someone else killed Mr. Pomeroy. Well, that's the front door, isn't it? Shall I?
Oh, no, I'll answer. Well, darling, this is a pleasant surprise. Come on in. I was just having a pleasant chat with Mr. Follett, one of our new boarders. He moved in this afternoon. Oh, Mr. Follett.
Yes?
I'd like you to meet Charles Ainsley, my fiancé.
Mr. Ainsley? How do you do, Mr. Follett?
Oh, darling, I didn't get back from the office until quite late. Haven't had a thing except tea. Why don't we drive over to Armand's, have supper?
Of course.
Well, you two sit down and get acquainted. I'll run up to my room and change. Well, Charlie, you were saying something about Pomeroy.
Yes. Why did you do it, Laura? Why?
Do what, darling?
Stop fooling with me, Laura. This is serious. You killed him, didn't you? Didn't you?
What are you talking about?
Oh, come off it. You've been playing up to Pomeroy for months, trying to find out what he was up to, where he got his money.
Yes, and I found out, too. He told me why he took a trip to Dover every week.
He did?
Yes. He always met a man there. He was working with a mysterious man from Calais. I never found out his name, but I did find out why Pomeroy met him each week.
You must have become very friendly with Pomeroy.
Of course I did. I wanted to know what he was up to. And what do you think, Charlie? Our Mr. Pomeroy was involved in a flourishing little racket. Forged passports.
Forged passports?
Yes. After his meeting in Dover every Friday with this man from Calais, Pomeroy always came back with a lot of money.
So that's why you waited for him in St. Margaret's Mews. That's why you killed him.
I killed Pomeroy?
Yes, you know very well you did.
Oh, all right, Charlie. I didn't mean to. Honestly, I didn't. I only wanted to knock him out. Oh, I guess I hit him too hard. I wanted the money, don't you see? I had to have it for us.
So now you have the money, Pomeroy's money, and it's all changed.
Nothing's changed, Charlie. I don't have the money.
What?
Something went wrong the other night. Pomeroy must not have established contact with the man from Calais. He didn't have any money with him. All I found on him were the passports.
You didn't take them?
Of course I did. A dozen of them.
Laura, for heaven's sakes, if the police catch you...
Oh, they won't. I've hidden them away.
But, Laura, don't...
Stop worrying. The police aren't concerned about me. They don't suspect a thing.
Don't they? And what's he doing back there at the boarding house, that Mr. Follett?
What do you mean?
I recognized him the moment I saw him. Your Mr. Follett happens to be Inspector Follett of Scotland Yard.
It comes as a shock, doesn't it, Laura? The sudden knowledge that the new boarder is Mrs. Reeve, the man who calls himself Mr. Follett, is actually an inspector from Scotland Yard. His coming there has something to do with Tom Pomeroy's death. Yes, you're certain of that. But you're not certain how much the inspector knows, suspects. Because of plans you've made, his appearance complicates matters, doesn't it? And then there's your boyfriend, Charles Ainsley. In the restaurant that evening, he's not at all happy with what you've done. He's angry and frightened.
I tell you, Laura, you're a fool to go on with this.
Am I, darling? Why? True, there's a police inspector staying at the boarding house, but he can't possibly know I killed Pomeroy, can he? No one knows except the two of us. And you won't say anything, will you?
I should, but feeling as I do about you, I don't suppose I will. Especially since you say it was really an accident. That you only meant to knock him out.
It was an accident, Charlie, honestly. I wouldn't have tried to kill him for anything. Oh, you do believe me, don't you?
I suppose so. But you've got to give up this wild scheme. Get rid of those passports.
Sorry, I don't intend to.
But what good are they to you?
I can convert them into cash. They'll bring a very good price on the continent. After all, that's how Pomeroy was making his money. Why can't I?
For one thing, you don't know who his contact was, this man from Calais.
Ah, but I do know they met at the Ram's Head Inn at Dover.
Laura, you can't possibly hope to find this man. Give it up. I beg you, Laura, give it up.
It's no use, Charlie. I won't. I'm just going to sit tight, keep my eye on Inspector Follett. Let him do his investigating. He can't prove a thing. And when this affair cools down, I'll find a way of getting rid of the passport.
Laura, for the last time...
Shall we look at the menu, darling? I'm starving.
Hello, Miss Ames.
Why, Mr. Follett, still up?
Yes, I was waiting for you to return. You have a nice supper?
Very.
Miss Ames, might we have a private chat?
Of course.
Then here, in the parlor. And we can shut the door.
As you wish.
Do sit down.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Follett?
That young man of yours...
Charlie?
Yes. You've known him long?
Several months. Why?
What does he do for his livelihood, I mean?
Oh, he's a salesman. Right now, he's selling cars, mostly used cars.
Oh, yes, of course. He represents Derek and Sloan, doesn't he?
That's right.
Oh, that's where I've seen him. I knew I'd seen him somewhere before. I was out there several times about 6 weeks ago when Derek and Sloan were having a difficult time with a very clever car thief. I recall now, I chatted with your young man for a few moments. He was quite helpful. He recognized me, I suppose.
As a matter of fact, he did, Inspector.
Hmm. I'm afraid of that. Well, there's no great harm down there. Miss Ames, I'd like to ask you a favor.
What is it, Inspector?
Mr. Follett. If you don't mind, I'd rather the others in the house didn't know.
Oh, anything you say, of course, but...
I dare say you'd like some sort of an explanation.
Your being here has something to do with Mr. Pomeroy's death, perhaps.
Yes. You see, we've suspected for some time that he was involved in a forged passport operation.
Forged passport? Mr. Pomeroy? Why, I can't believe it.
Nevertheless, it's true. Actually, he was only a runner, a courier, you might call him, working for a master forger.
What?
Yes. We think one of this forger's top aides resides here in this house.
Here? Why, that's incredible. Surely you can't suspect old Mr. Montrose or Amos Swinton.
No, I've been rather frank with you, Miss Ames, but I'm sure you understand that I can't tell you the name of our suspect. I'd much prefer you didn't even try to guess. And I must also ask you that you keep this little chat of ours highly confidential.
Why, yes, of course, Mr. Follett. Of course.
Yes. That is The Man from Calais, Part 1. We'll be back for Part 2 in a minute.
Still looking through the fog here.
I ran across something odd. The main female character said she was from upstate New York. I could be wrong, but I believe I heard that upstate New York has a weird territory, almost not the size of Texas, but a large part of it nobody lives in. It's wilderness.
Yes, yes. For as metropolitan as New York City is, they have some wild country.
Yeah.
Kind of like out here.
Have you guys ever visited any aspect of New York?
No.
Lived in Buffalo. But, Fogsbane is out there. Fogsbane is out there in upstate New York.
Okay.
I have been to Niagara Falls as a Ute. I guess we had to cut through part of New York to get there.
Yeah. My life travels took me through... And I existed in a place called Utica, New York, which is kind of upstate.
I'm sure it's called Utica.
Everybody thought, well...
It's Macabre, Boudiqui, and Utica. Those are the three things you need to know. That's what you learn on Erie House.
U-T-I-C-A. Utica. Yeah, that makes sense.
Utica.
All right. Yeah.
Utica. Utica. Oh, sorry. Different thing.
There, yeah. So.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to get high grades for Erie House diction by learning to speak by Erie House ways. Yeah.
No.
Right. No, we need
English
to play
major,
the...
An English major, I ain't.
We need to play the capitals of the United States by the Animaniacs.
Good stuff. Maybe we will at some point.
It was so educational.
Feature.
Yeah.
I didn't know we were trying to be educational here. What is this stuff?
Yeah, and we barely have time for it. We got a ton of radio. At least I can still do math. Let me get us through part two of The Man from Calais and the exciting conclusion on The Whistler.
Breathe a sigh of relief, don't you, Laura, as you hurry up to your room. The police don't suspect you of a thing. No, it's someone else they're interested in. Someone in the house they think Pomeroy worked for. And it's easy for you to venture a guess as to whom that someone is. Yes, quiet, mild-mannered Mr. Farnsgate, who runs the tobacco shop on the corner. He and Pomeroy were very friendly, weren't they? And Pomeroy spent a great deal of time at the shop. He could be the man Inspector Follett is watching, couldn't he? And you're determined to find out for certain. The following morning, after breakfast, you try to see Farnsgate alone before he leaves for his tobacco shop. And, as you hoped, he follows his usual custom and goes into the parlor to glance over the morning paper.
Mr. Farnsgate?
Yes, my dear?
I'm just bursting to tell someone, and I know I can trust you. Of course, you won't breathe a word of this.
Not a word.
It's about Mr. Follett. What do you suppose he's doing here?
Follett? Well, just what the rest of us are doing, I suppose. Enjoying Mrs. Reeves' hospitality.
I mean, he really isn't Mr. Follett at all.
Huh? What's this?
My boyfriend recognized him last night. He's really Inspector Follett of Scotland Yard.
What?
Imagine it. Living right here in the house.
Oh, dear me, dear me. An inspector from the yard, eh?
Must have something to do with the dreadful thing that happened to Mr. Pomeroy, don't you think?
Yes, yes, I should imagine that's it.
Well, what do you suppose he's up to?
Well, it's hard to say. No need for us to become alarmed, however. The police work in strange ways, my dear. Strange ways.
You watch Mr. Farnsgate lean back in his chair, pretend to go on reading his paper. But you know his mind is working furiously. Yes, you're certain the news you've confided to him has come as a definite shock. A few minutes later, you go up to your room and then tiptoe back along the hall to the head of the stairs and wait. Finally, you see Farnsgate step out of the parlor, look around cautiously, and then dart back inside. You slip quietly down the stairs and listen just outside the parlor door as he places a phone call.
Yes, Ramsgate in Dover.
It was a shot in the dark, wasn't it, Laura? And you're certain it's hit its mark. Yes, Farnsgate is frightened. And you're positive he's calling the one man you want to find.
Hello? Mr. Vincent, please. Yes, Vincent. Oh? He isn't registered, but he's expected sometime this evening. No message, thank you. I'll call him this evening.
Oh, it's you, Laura.
My. Not a very warm reception, I must say.
Come in.
Sorry if I disturbed your slumber. But it's time you were up anyway.
Didn't sleep very well last night, I'm afraid.
Hmm? Conscience bothering you?
As a matter of fact, yes.
Oh, shouldn't let it, you know.
Easy, I suppose, for you to say.
My, aren't you in a mood this morning? Well, a nice long drive will change all that. Do you good to get out. Get out of this musty old flat.
Drive? I wasn't aware we'd planned anything.
Well, sometimes things come up rather suddenly, darling. You said I'd never find the man from Calais. Well, I have.
What?
Yes. A wonderful stroke of luck. Well, I won't go into all the boring details, but I have found him. I know who he is, where he is, and I intend to see him.
You want me to drive you down to Dover, is that it?
Oh, dear darling.
No, Laura. I don't want any part of this.
Mm. I was afraid you'd say that.
Give this whole thing up, Laura, please.
And if I don't?
If you don't, well...
I know, as you said, you don't want any part of this. And I suppose that includes me.
I'm afraid it does.
All right. If that's the way it's got to be.
Laura, if you'll only listen to
reason... Save your breath, darling. I won't change my mind. Either you're in this with me or you're not. And since you're not, well, we simply call it quits right here and now.
That afternoon, you're aboard the train speeding toward Dover. Certain you'll have no difficulty in making a satisfactory deal with Mr. Vincent, the man from Calais. You're sure he'll buy the passport you took from Mr. Pomeroy, if only to avoid later complications with you. And you're really not sorry about Charlie, are you? No. He seems a nice young man, but weak. Too weak for you, isn't he, Laura? And you're glad that's all over. It's early afternoon when you arrive in Dover and register at a small hotel. When you're settled in your room, you phone the Ramsgate Inn.
Ramsgate Inn.
I'd like to speak to Mr. Vincent, please.
Vincent?
Yes.
I'm sorry, miss, but Mr. Vincent hasn't arrived. He's a reservation, and we're expecting him quite soon.
Oh? When he comes in, will you please have him call Miss Ames?
Ames?
Yes, Laura Ames. I'm at the Dover Inn.
I'll tell him, Miss Ames.
Tell Mr. Vincent to phone as soon as he arrives, will you please? It's rather important.
Just as soon as he arrives, Miss Ames.
Yes?
Miss Ames?
That's right.
I'm Mr. Vincent. You left word for me to phone you as soon as I arrive.
Yes. I was rather anxious to talk to you, Mr. Vincent, on a business matter.
What sort of business?
It concerns a package I received from Mr. Pomeroy.
Pomeroy?
Yes. It isn't worth a great deal to me. I thought perhaps you'd be interested in buying it.
Just what kind of a package is it, Miss Ames?
Well, if you're interested, I'd prefer to discuss it with you personally rather than over the phone.
Perhaps that would be better. Shall we say at dinner?
I don't see why not.
Very well, I'll pick you up in an hour. We'll drive out in the country somewhere. I know several charming spots.
Sounds very nice. I'll expect you in an hour.
Questioning was over now, and the captured criminal stared blankly at the group of police authorities surrounding him. Only a few details remained before the case could be marked closed, because Mr. Vincent had been apprehended at the scene a moment after the crime had taken place. Yes, it was all over. And Scotland Yard Inspector Follett's manner was relaxed as he summed up the results of his investigation.
That's strange. You shadow Farnsgate, follow him to Dover and find you. Tell me, Farnsgate, were you aware we were watching you?
Yes. I came to Dover to warn Vincent you were on our trail.
What about the girl? Where does she fit in?
Laura Ames? I don't know. I had no idea she'd left London.
Seems you had no idea of a number of things, especially the true identity of Mr. Vincent.
No, I didn't. He always used a French accent. I'm sure Miss Ames didn't know either. If she had, she wouldn't have come all the way over here to Dover.
That's probably true. All right, Mr. Vincent, or should I say Charlie, you want to tell us why you shot Miss Ames?
She wouldn't stop. Insisted on getting directly to Vincent.
That must have been quite a surprise, a young man turning out to be the mysterious man from Calais.
Quite a surprise.
And once she knew you were Mr. Vincent, you had to eliminate him. Is that right?
That's right. There was no other way to stop a girl like Laura. I rather cared for her, too.
The Whistler. Listen next week when once again the United States Air Forces in Europe present The Whistler.
What he was trying to say was the Whistler comes to you through Erie House Radio. Yes, that's quite sure what he was saying. We probably better learn something quick so we can dive into our next program. Erie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
Look before you leap and don't kill before the cash.
Okay, that's some funny stuff right there. And speaking of funny, we got a funny radio
yes.
program coming up.
We do.
Yeah, with a funny title. Forog.
Forog, yes.
Frog.
I can
explain it, but I'm going to leave it to Nettie Seagoon. I can explain it, but I'm going to leave it to Nettie Seagoon to explain it.
All righty. Well, you might as well jump right into that. Let's get into part one of Legoon Show. Originally broadcast
December 21, 1954.
Yay! This is the BBC.
The wretched man was about to refer to the highly ignored Goon Show. Stop! Please, Ed.
Sir.
Leave your toys for a moment, and let's have some words.
Yes, big brother. Ladies and gentlemen, this week the Goons present a science fiction fantasia in a cunning attempt to take the place of the horror comics. This masterpiece of mediocrity is entitled...
Forug!
It was one of those days that follow the night. London was blanketed by a thick, swirling pea soup fog. All was still as Ned Seagoon put on his hat and coat.
Yes. I decided to go out for a breath of fresh air.
Let him go.
I hadn't realized it was so foggy, but indeed it was so thick that I had to walk in front of myself with a blazing torch.
Oh, I'm not the only one.
As I walked along, a stream of buses and cars followed in my wake. Strange how men recognize a leader. I guided him along when suddenly... I bumped into someone. Are you all right, madam?
You should know.
Madam, perhaps I can direct you somewhere.
I'd better direct you, sir.
Me? You direct me, that's rich. Me, that's rich, that is indeed. Me that guides half London. What makes you think I'm lost?
You're in my kitchen.
Impossible. According to my calculations, I've just come up Highgate Hill.
You've just come up 3 flights of steps, mister.
Oh, good heavens. On the 3rd floor. No, it can't be.
It happens every day in London.
Young Ned took a taxi to the foot of the stairs, and 2 hours later he was again in the street.
Curse this fog! It's worse than I first thought.
Enter invisible blue bottle with bronchitis and smug mask round both knees to keep leggy piggies warm. Voila! No audience applause. That is because of the fog. Here I don't... Hey!
Oh!
Hey! I have bumped against a sack full of something soft.
Whoever you are, it's me.
I'm sorry, madam. This fog is thicker than it was before, but it's warmer. Kicking it has gone warmer.
Will you take your head out of my pocket?
So that is why it's warmer. Think. I must ask Mummy to make me a pocket so I can wear my head in it. Speak. Pardon me. Can you direct me to the BBC? I'm appearing in the Naughty Coon Show.
Just let me get my bearings, little hairpin legs. Now, BBC. Which way are you facing?
I'm facing the BBC.
Oh, well, straight on.
Thank you, nice invisible human. Disappears into murk and fog singing... Feed me some men who are coming. You got in, Swan, you? You have directed me into the dreaded water, and I cannot see for the fog, so I don't know whether I'm drowning or not. Shout help, just in case. Help, just in case. Lights match to see if feet are touching the bottom. No, but the legs are. I made a little joke, you.
I don't wish to know that. And with that stinging repartee in my lips, I made my way unerringly to my chambers. First left, straight, and cast this bus. Stop following me, I tell you. I'm going home. I say, driver, stop following me.
Can't help it. You got your braces round the radiator.
Bless my soul, you're right. I thought it was warm, a hint of me.
We're not allowed to say it behind.
I found it much easier to walk without the bus. And was soon at my front door. My butler let me in, which was strange. I hadn't got one.
Yes, sir?
Oh, I'm terribly sorry. I must be in the wrong house.
Good. So long as I'm all right.
It's extraordinary, but I can't find my way, Jack.
Oh. Don't worry, sir. You go home and have a good rest.
Home? That's the trouble. I don't seem to be able to find it.
Good night, sir.
Yes, but I recognize the voice. Good heavens. I must be well out of my way. I live in Brixton. Anybody going to Brixton?
The fog lasted 3 days. And so great was the turmoil it caused, a special sitting was called in Westminster. Some of the members were so begrimed by the fog that the speaker opened the debate with the words,
"Gentlemen, be seated."
Ian, is it not time?
Yeah.
That something definite was done about this fog? Yes.
And on that conclusive word, the debate was about to end when suddenly a figure, walking in front of himself with a burnt-out torch, emerged from under the front bench.
My name is Ned Segun. Thank you. Thank you. Honorable members, I am an amateur scientist.
What about tea?
Thank you. Thank you very much. As I was wandering about in the fog, I believe I stumbled on a solution to rid London of this annual horror.
Does the honorable member realize that fog is costing us millions a year?
Well, stop buying it then.
Yeah.
Father.
Hey, gentlemen!
What about tea?
Gentlemen, as it costs the taxpayer so much, are you prepared to sponsor me in an attempt to rid London of fog?
Bravo.
So Ned Segun, by his own initiative and resource, was given the official title of Fog and Fix Smog Officer. In short, Fatso.
In my little government-sponsored 12-story laboratory, I carried out my theory, which was the heating atomically the belts of cold air rising from Earth's radiation. In order to warm the atmosphere, I called my experiment hot air.
I first heard the news of Segun's appointment on December the 3rd. At the time, I was quietly contemplating Admiralty Arch from the top of my 170-foot column. Yes, my name is Nelson.
How can a statue receive news?
By pigeon.
Yeah. Why is the statue of Nelson interested in Ned Segun's fog experiments? And will Ned succeed? Don't forget to order your next installment of Forog, complete with a large color portrait of Big Wall Greenslade and a special musical noise on the fog pipe by Max Geldray.
Not just great British comedy, but some nice music, too. I like the harmonica. There you go. It's Blind Melon Gar in our studio tonight.
It is. I was walking down the street, but it was so foggy I couldn't see.
There you go. He reminded me of Uncle Vic there for just a minute.
Just for a minute. Just for a minute.
Just for a minute.
It's not easy being me, I tell you.
Yep.
I'm so many different people, I don't know how to sign a check.
Who else could you be? They say, we were talking about this before the show started. They say, if you don't pay attention to the news, you're uninformed. If you do pay attention to the news, you're misinformed. I say, no news is good news in more ways than one. There you go. How about that?
How about that?
Controversial as I care to get today.
Yes, good. Good. Because we're here for fun tonight.
Listen fun to we're having. Fun we're having with the Goon Show.
They had a Goon Show.
Peter Sellers.
Oh, what am I doing?
Harry Secombe and, oh my. I can't believe I forgot the guy who writes all this.
The other guy.
Marty Feldman?
So,
no, not Marty Feldman.
No.
We'll keep an eye out for him.
We will.
Yeah.
It'll come to me when we're not on the air.
Ernest Borgnine.
No.
He was a stunt writer.
Spike Milligan. Spike Milligan.
Writer.
Spike Milligan, yes.
What the hell is a stunt writer?
He writes all the exciting parts.
Oh, I see. A stunt writer.
Yeah. Yep. A stunt writer.
Found a good Roku channel real quick before we get into our completion of our Goon Show. And it's all like TV stuff, made for TV movies. So for the first time in years, I got to watch Duel with Dennis Weaver, you know, with the truck. That was cool. That's a good movie.
Yeah.
And I hadn't seen Trilogy of Terror in a while with Karen Black.
There's an Elizabeth Montgomery made for TV movie where her sister.
Lizzie Borden.
Well, I don't know if Lizzie Borden was made for TV. It probably was. I don't think it hit TV theaters. But no, there's another one where Elizabeth Montgomery's sister is living in a rather isolated home, and she has a boyfriend, and he's demented, and he kills the sister, and Elizabeth Montgomery is not getting calls. Or she ends up out there, and comedy ensues from there.
Comedy
ensues from that point.
Comedy, yes.
Well, comedy ensues. That's what
another one of
about,
my favorites
right?
that's not on that channel, and I wish it was because I have not seen this for years, was Don't Be Afraid of the Dark with the little coconut head guys. That was another made-for-TV thriller.
There was one. I just ran across this. What was it? It was like
The Boy in the Plastic Bowl?
The Boy and the Werewolf or something. Where in the heck is that? I just, because I was looking for werewolf things, and I ran there it is. Werewolf. Girls Dormitory, Cry of the Werewolf.
Cry of the Werewolf with June Lockhart. Very young June Lockhart.
Yeah. 1973. This looks like a very made-for-TV movie. 1973. The Boy Who Cried Werewolf. Oh,
yes,
so
I think
bad,
that was made
funny.
For TV. Yeah.
Oh, that's so bad.
Teen Wolf. There's
I've
a good werewolf
it.
Movie for you.
Yeah, I've aired it, but I need to get my producer, director on it, and we're gonna show it again.
That's really funny.
Really bad film. Really bad film. You like
the
bad film?
Bad films are the best ones to host. They're the best ones to host.
Yeah, because you can make fun
of
them.
Lot to work with. Lot to work with.
Mm-hmm. If you're doing it for comedy chops, and most of us are, it's great.
Yep.
Absolutely wonderful.
And let us let the Goon Show exercise their comedy chops. We'll be back with more fun and maybe some bonus material.
We must apologize to listeners who received their pictures on our Elephant and Castle transmitter for the fact that Max Geldray was blotted out at the end by a bout of thick fog.
I was in my laboratory at the time, and as I looked out of the government-sponsored window, I saw the dirty yellow fog and vowed to abolish it for good and I. Come in.
Good day, sir. Are you Ned Seagoon?
I have that good fortune.
Yeah.
I looked at my visitor. He was dressed in a gray stone naval uniform. He was well over 10 feet, which gave him the appearance of being tall.
You may call me Nelson.
I'm pleased to... Nelson?
Yes, the statue of Horatio Nelson. You don't believe it, do you?
Yes, I mean... Well, I... You see... Apples!
Hello? Oh, hello, Nelson.
Apples, I just... You can see him, too?
Yeah. Well, I don't blame him for coming down off that column. I just want to harm you. You've done a good thing.
Apples! You can't possibly speak to stone. You must be out of your mind.
What's your excuse?
Enough. Now listen to me, Seagoon. Stop experimenting with fog.
I'm trying to get rid of it.
Precisely. But we statues, we must have fog.
Ying dong it lie poor.
Fog!
Now, when the weather is really foggy, do you say?
Yeah.
It is the only chance we statues have to move around and see the sights.
I see.
Yes.
So really, you want me to forget my fog experiment so that you can go gallivanting at random?
Precisely.
No, I won't do it, I tell you. I won't do it. I won't. I'll clear the fog if it's the last thing I do.
That may very well be so.
Eccles. Tell me it was all a dream. It was all a dream, wasn't it?
Ooh.
What's that you've got?
This came off Nelson.
It's a stone chip.
You must have been having a stone supper.
Oh. It's not true. It's not true, I tell you. It can't be true. It's not.
Achilles, dear chap.
Is that you, Nelson?
Who else? Seagoon refuses to drop his fog experiments. Pass it on around.
Verily, I will. That help me down.
Is it?
Eros, I say, Eros.
Who is that tapping my little stone footy?
I bear the name of Achilles. Now listen.
Yes, I am listening. Can we get down? I've got a date in Piccadilly because I'm meeting Peter Pan.
I have a message. Seagoon is going to do away with fog.
Using naughty Matthew.
Now, with all haste, pass this message on.
I will do this. Steps down off pedestal. Rotten stinking fountain. I'm always getting wetted. Exit left to pass on the dreaded news. Thinks. It does feel nice to put my leg down for a bit there.
Then the fog gradually started to lift, and the statues hurried back to their pedestals and columns.
All right, lads, it's only me.
And the news being passed round had reached the statue of William Ewart Gladstone.
Must pass this unfortunate news on to Boadicea. Boadicea?
Who is it?
It's me, Bodie. It's Gladstone.
Oh.
I have some bad news for you.
It's not another student's ride, is it? After that thing they put on my head last year.
No. It's worse than that.
Couldn't be.
Ned Seagoon is going to do away with the fog.
Ah, the naughty man, he's nutty.
Nutty, yes, but if there's no fog, we won't be able to see each other again.
Well, we never see each other in this fog anyway.
But I'd never be able to come over here and not see you.
Oh, dear Gladstone. Oh,
yes, Bodie Wordy.
Well, the fog's lifting. Well. Oh.
You're right. Mercy save us. How am I going to get back?
I could run you around in the old chariot.
It's no good. You've got no reflectors on it, Minnie.
You crazy, Buddy Gladstone. Mm-hmm. There's a mortal coming. Oh, dear.
Yes, it was me. But I didn't notice anything as I was reading the Radio Times.
How many of you noticed that for the next 3 days, Gladstone was holding the reins in Boadicea's chariot, eh? You must notice these things, you know.
But, Major Brunlock, it's true, I tell you. I saw Nelson with my own eyes. He came to me at my government-sponsored laboratory. I demand military protection. If all these statues gang up on me, I'm finished.
Stop stroking me putties and let's get this down in writing. Now then.
My name is Ned Siegel.
I've got that. Now, did any other responsible person see the statue?
Oh, yeah, I did.
No other responsible person.
You must believe me, Major.
Sit down, lad, and have some more gin.
I've never drunk gin in my life.
Well, sit down and have some more of whatever you had too much of.
You must give me military protection.
Now, look, supposing I ordered a soldier to watch Nelson to see he didn't move. I mean, I'd soon get me ticket, wouldn't I, eh?
I'd give you a job as personal bodyguard. £10 a week and all found.
Corporal Gladys?
Yeah?
Put Nelson under close arrest.
2 days later, fog again enveloped the south of England. But this time there was a cordon of Scots guards round the base of Nelson's column. Anyone over 10 feet was challenged.
Nobody noticed Nelson go through on his knees.
Nobody noticed Nelson going through on his knees, did he? Well. Bully for Nelson. I was in my government-sponsored offices at the time. In a few days, my experiment will be tested. Then gone will be fog, and the statues will not be able to harm me. You!
Yes, Neddy. You are determined to go ahead, I see.
Yes, and I've told the War Office about you, so there. And they believe me.
Do they really?
Yes, well, they mean they're protecting me. I'm government-sponsored.
You silly, twisted boy, you.
Yes, quick, Echo, get his arm.
Okay, I got him.
There.
Now, what have you accomplished?
I've had some stone handcuffs specially prepared. And now you're my prisoner. I'm going to take you along to the War Office and prove that you're true. Echo, open the door. Power!
Okay.
Come on, you wretched stone statue.
Poor, foolish, misguided boy.
I don't want to worry, Neddy, but I can't see who he keeps talking to.
Yesterday, a young government-sponsored scientist was helped down Nelson's column, where he had handcuffed himself to the statue of Nelson. In warning him, the magistrate said there was too much of this sort of thing going on. However, as this was Seagoon's first offense, he was sentenced to 3 minutes of Ray Ellington.
One early morning, as I was walking, I met a woman and started talking. Went to a tavern to get a few nips, and all I had was a mint julep. One mint julep was the cause of it all. Hey! I don't remember just how it started, but all I know is we should have parted. I stole a kiss and then another. I didn't mean to take it further. One mint julep was the cause of it all. Oh, the lights were burning low. There in the tavern went through the swing door. I popped her father, he said, I saw you win. You kissed my daughter, got to win her right now. Oh, faceless slaughter, I didn't know just what I was doing. I had to marry or face ruin. A mint julep,
a mint julep,
a mint julep,
a mint julep.
One mint julep was the cause of it all. Now listen, I don't want to bore you with all my troubles, but from now on I'll be thinking double. And I'll buy roses and maybe tulips. I've got too much trouble from buying tulips. I don't remember just how it started, but all I know is we should have parted. I'm in tulip, I'm in tulip, I'm in tulip,
I'm in tulip.
One mint tulip. Yes, one mint tulip was the cause of it all.
Success! Success! Eccles, I've done it! At last! My experiment went off beautifully. The fog disappeared like magic, never to return. No more fog, Eccles. Just think of it. They'll make me Lord Seagoon, and you'll be Lady Eccles. Oh, wonderful day, wonderful day. And listen to the bells, Eccles. This is Seagoon's day. And the crowd, listen to them. Open the window. Come on, open the window and let them see me. Thank you! Thank you!
I don't want to say anything, but the streets are deserted.
Seagoon bathes in the limelight of public acclaim as the cleanser of London. It was indeed a pleasure to sit in London's parks and read a copy of the Radio Times. This pleasure was available to all for three whole days. Then...
Just think, Eccles. In this very little government-sponsored laboratory, our triumph was achieved. By Jove, it's getting dark early. It's only 2 o'clock.
Yeah, if I wasn't with you, I'd say it was fog. Oh.
Fog? It can't be.
Oh, no. There's somebody smoking heavy. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
What are my notes?
Oh, they've gone. Major Bloodnock took them.
Took them? Where?
He left London Airport a week ago with them.
I don't like this, Eccles. I smell a rat.
I don't want to worry, Nettie, but I can't smell anything.
I want you to get a sample of that fog.
Oh, yeah. I've got a bucket. Hold on.
Yes, open the window, you idiot. I want to analyze it. Close the window.
While Ned Seagoon is analyzing the fog, 2, 4, 6, 8. Who do we appreciate? Green Slade. And now, Forog Chapter 8, The Awakening.
I've got it, Eccles! By Jove, now it all fits in. This isn't fog, neither is it smog. This is Forog.
Oh.
Yes, foreign fog, you see? It's been manufactured abroad and shipped here.
I wonder how much duty there is to pay.
Oh. Is it? Serious, Eccles, serious stuff.
Is it, yeah?
Major Bloodnock has obviously sold my notes to Nelson. I must get to the House of Commons with the news. I have great news concerning our beloved London.
Speak up, man. Let's have it now.
It is not fog enveloping us.
What about the...
Nay. It is fog. A kind of fog manufactured in foreign parts.
Never heard of it.
Gentlemen, please. This fog is being sponsored by the statues of London.
It's a trick to get fog.
No! Major Bradnock of the War Office has told me himself.
Shut him up.
Prepared.
Shut that man up.
Have you placed all the bricks in the right holes and the right square?
Stop this nonsense. I don't know what's the matter with you all. I demand to see the authorities.
Of course you will be able to see them in a short while. They are collecting evidence at the minute.
I don't understand what this is all about.
Good morning, Dr. Moriarty.
And good morning to you, Dr. Eidelberger. And this here is little Ned Seagoon, eh?
Doctor, have they examined the forog?
They have. It's turned out to be fog.
It's not. It's not, I tell you. It's forog.
Yes. Take it easy now.
Did you find Major Bloodnock?
Yes, we have checked with the War Office records and find there is no such man of that name ever existed.
Huh? Go to my government-sponsored laboratory, and you'll see his name in the visitor's book.
Yes, we've checked with that address you gave us, but there is no laboratory there. It is an old bomb site.
Honestly, there is a laboratory. There must be a laboratory. As true as my name is Ned Seagoon.
Ah, that's another point. There is no such person as Ned Seagoon. I'll just put these little squares in.
That was The Goon Show, a recorded program featuring Peter Sellers, Harry Secom, and Spike Milligan, with Arranged and Quartet and Max Gelbrecht. The orchestra was conducted by Wally Stott, script by Eric Sykes and Spike Milligan, announcer Wallace Greenslade, the program produced by Peter Eaton.
It's The Goon Show. Fun stuff, Dave. I am so glad you brought that to Erie House. This is what, the third time we've had The Goon Show?
Yeah. So much fun. he was well over 10 feet tall, which gave him the appearance of looking tall, of looking big or something like that. It was
just, yes.
I love the one.
Yeah.
British are good in the absurdity.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Very good stuff.
Yep.
Remember that movie with Adrian Barbeau, The Fog? Remember The Fog? Ooh.
Was that Don Carpenter film? Yeah.
Another John Carpenter film.
They ended up on a. Didn't they end up on a roof somewhere?
Yeah.
Trying to get away from it.
Was it fog or foreign fog? Farag.
I don't know. Yeah.
Oh, and then there's a terrible
I've got a moral
movie called
if you want
this.
One.
It's a terrible one. It has a horrible, horrible, horrible ending.
I've got a moral if you want one.
Okay. I didn't think we'd get one for The Goon Show. Let us do a moral, shall we?
Sure.
Erie House Radio proudly presents Scar's Moral of the Story.
Never tip a statue expecting change.
Well, that's your opinion.
Uh-huh.
Pooty guy.
So now do you understand, Dale, where I was talking about the Marvel Comics villain, the Grey Gargoyle, with the statues that were moving around and talking and all?
Yes.
Yeah.
But I remember him. I think I may have had an issue of Cap Am with the Grey Gargoyle. I didn't have the old Journey into Mystery, though.
Yeah, those are a little bit longer in the tooth and a lot more expensive these days to get.
Oh, good heavens, yeah.
Best to get a black and white reprint that they make. You still enjoy it. It's just in black and white.
Yeah, a reprint mag is better than not having the story at all. At least the art's original. The inks might be a little different sometimes, I've seen, but good stuff.
Yeah. I have a bunch of them. They're fun. But, yeah, I was listening to the Goon Show. I was like, wait a second. Wasn't there? And then it started clawing at the back of my brain going, what is the name of this arch villain that could turn people to stone? And it took me a while to find it.
That was him. And Medusa.
Yeah, there was Medusa. Yeah, it's a very
Medusa-like.
Not
Marvel's Medusa, mythology Medusa.
Yeah,
Marvel's Medusa
that's
had
even
living
different.
Hair. Yeah, Marvel's Medusa had living hair.
Well, yep. Oh, did you ever see that train wreck of a film called Medusa? It had Medusa in it? It was a Harryhausen thing.
What was it? Clash of the Titans, I think?
No. It was a standalone. I can't remember, but it was a...
There's a British film, I think, called Medusa.
Yeah.
A Hammer. Yeah, that was not Harryhausen.
Hammer. No. Oh, well, it was really bad, though. It was really bad.
No. Harryhausen did do a Medusa, but not in the Hammer film.
For the Clash of Titans. Yeah, okay. All right, gotcha.
Yeah.
I knew they in the Hammer film, they animated her hair. They might have animated the entire figure. It was really bizarre.
Yes. The Hammer film is called The Gorgon. That's right, D. Miller. You're absolutely correct.
There you go. And the goof was when I ran across it, I was like, oh, this is going to be amazing. So I brought the horrible heart. And, oh, it was horrible.
Yep.
It was bad. I was like, oh, give me my life back.
I'll fight for Harryhausen.
I used to have some really bad films. I thought I used to show some really bad films too. I see what Gar's been showing lately. My goodness.
Thank you, Dave. Yeah, that last film was a train wreck. Oh my gosh.
Or as the ghoul used to say, voyage to the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah. Terror of the blood hunters. No terror, no blood, no hunters. It was bad. It was really bad.
But it was a terror. So there you got that.
It was. And tomorrow, as I've threatened before, if all goes well, Robot Monster, another turkey. Oh, God.
Okay. I love that one. That's one of my favorite El Cheapos.
Well,
we got time for a quick wheel, I guess.
Yeah. Well, let's go for it.
Dave, I'll give it a spin myself.
Around, around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
Would you turn on my microphone, please? Here, I have somebody I think you'd like to meet. Ladies and gentlemen, we've promised to have this man at our microphone on so many programs, but he is here today, the human fireball, Laughing Eddie Upjohn.
Thank you very much, Bob and Ray.
How'd you get that name, Human Fireball? What does that mean? You just fast, or do you dive through a hoop of fire? What is it you do, Larry?
Well, that is exactly right, what you said last. I dive through a hoop of fire.
Great Scott, Rudy. Do you wear an asbestos suit or anything like that?
No protective covering of any kind.
Well, what do you
wear? My crash helmet.
You wear just a crash helmet? Well,
crash helmet and my regular uniform, Superman.
Oh, you wear a Superman uniform?
Superman suit, it is.
It's a suit.
You made out of muslin.
I see. And could you describe your stature? You're about, what, 3 feet?
No, 4'1".
4 feet one, but that, of course, is offset, isn't it?
By the fact that I'm 345 pounds.
You're short and fat. Now, how do you get up the steam, more or less, to come running down the track and dive through this hoop?
Well, that's just about what I have to do. I get way up at the far end of the track. Then they get a signal for me to light the hoop.
Uh-huh. You light the hoop yourself?
Then I start running like the wind.
Does your associate, it's a lady, isn't it?
Yes.
She wears a leotard.
You have to have a lady in the act. It dresses it up a little bit.
Yes, it certainly does. She lights the hoop, and then you
then
come running.
Then I start running like the wind.
I see. And then you dive through the hoop, and then you have, what, sawdust on the other side, is it? So that
usually.
And sometimes the sawdust isn't there. The lady in the leotard forgets to put it in.
Sometimes it's plain, hard, old dirt.
Then that would...
That surprises me when I jump through the fire.
I see. Well, we'll
land
talk
in
to
the
you.
Dirt.
All right, sir. Thank you for coming by.
Thank you.
Right out that door, sir. We had hoped to have a demonstration here, but the fire laws wouldn't permit the lighting of the hoop here in the studio, and so we couldn't bring you that demonstration. Our sincere apologies, but the law being what it is, we have to abide by it. And that's what makes, of course, our country great.
That's that, and Bob and Ray make our country great, too. Tomorrow night here on Erie House, we got two tales for you, CBS Radio Workshop and Theater 5 with more hosts in the mists or still foggy or something.
You know, I'm feeling a little foggy about that, Dale. I don't know.
Yeah. And just so you know, tomorrow is our 799th show. That means next Friday, big show 800. It's all about the number 800. Maybe we'll have a 1-800 number you can call. Or 646-378-0264, as you like. And then tomorrow night, though, 6:30, we're on with those two shows. Right after that, at 8 o'clock, it's Horrible Horror starring...
what's his name?
Gary the Ghoul. Pause for effect, you know? Build up the drama. Scarlet Gould, 8 o'clock. And you're going to have Robot Monster, hopefully.
If everything works out, yes.
Awesome. I hope your bubble machine is working.
I hope so.
If you don't have one, I'll see if there's one I can loan you.
Yeah.
Lots of bubbles in that movie. I remember there were bubbles in that movie.
A lot of bubbles. I don't know. They came from the world of bubble. It didn't make any sense.
No.
No. One thing that we needed for our broadcast, we needed a foghorn.
Yes.
Yeah, we needed a foghorn.
CW, too. Hopefully CW is doing okay and will join us tomorrow. At 6:30 Eastern.
And you guys can get a foghorn for tomorrow, I hope, right?
Yeah. 800 shows, and then we spent shared over, what, 1,500 different individuals?
On that night, the second of two shows that we air will be the 1,500th full, complete radio show that we've shared.
Yikes. Plus tons and tons of clips. Music and more.
Yep.
I've been there for a third of them, right?
No, more than that. You've been more than half. You've been more than half. Go back and count them.
I don't have enough fingers for all that. What are you talking about?
Well, just start listening to them in the archive. Go back to 2016 and a half.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the middle of 2016. And then the old-time radio kicked off in January of 2017, if you prefer just the old-time radio. We were talk before that.
Mm-hmm.
For a short time.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Well, see you tomorrow. Here's to a delayed and cut-off outro. Sorry, gang.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Can you dig it?
Excellent. My timing was way, way off. I am so sorry. Those in the archive will probably never know what happened.
Sometimes that happens.
In the archive, we were perfectly on time for those in the archive. Perfectly on time.
There you go. Yes.
Yep.
Exactly.
Oh, Dee Miller joined us from your program. That's cool.
I know. Yeah.
Speaking of which, I miss Linda Liu. Remember Linda Liu would always...
Yeah, she showed up.
he's there on Erie House or on a garage
yeah.
show. I say, hey, where are you
yeah.
been? She's,
yeah.
haven't been there for a while. Yeah, no crud. Yeah.
She's
yeah.
got a lot on her plate,
she,
from what I understand.
Yeah, she had a mother that fell recently. They'd be able to break the hip routine, and that's never good.
No, that's got to be keeping her busy. That's
and
for sure.
What else? Some other stuff going on. I forget. Yeah, it's always great seeing these folks coming in from wherever they're coming from. But, yeah, D. Miller dropped by. I was like, wow, okay, cool. So,
very cool.
Yeah.
And then show 800 shows, David. My God.
Where are we?
A lot of shows.
Let's see. When would 1,000 be? When would 1,000 be?
I don't know.
About 2 years from now, I think. If we're doing 100 shows a year, no.
Okay.
Yeah.
It'd
be 2 years from now.
Actually, we do more than 100 shows a year because.
Yeah.
We do two
Halloween
a week, and then on Halloween,
yep.
we have extras on Halloween, so.
Yep.
It's probably
and
closer
extras
to
for Christmas, don't you?
Do we have to subtract all the ones Blog Talk screwed up for us?
No, because we make those back up again.
We do,
mm-hmm.
and we have. We never give them less than 50 a year. We never give them less than 50 a year.
Is that I say?
Or 100. That's right. There's 52 weeks, isn't there? That's 100 shows a week or a year. Gee, many criminy.
Minimum.
Yep. It's been a fun ride, man. Wow. And Gar, it was so great when you joined up with us. It added life and comedy.
It was you guys that, controlled your own fate asking me back.
I don't even know how we crossed paths, to be honest with you, first. I can't remember.
Misty Blue from Gippardoo,
that's
Missouri
it.
Or something.
Yeah, and Timex, yes.
Yes, that was the tie-in. Was
yep.
I ran across them, I was like, oh, my gosh. And I enjoyed what she did. And I, through the magic of the internet and social media, ran across her. And I was like, oh, love this. And then she said, it was her. She said, I'm very nervous. And I was wondering if you would call in on the night where I'm doing this, kind of as support. And I was like, sure. And then her phone goofed up and we ended up talking.
Yep.
And then it's been downhill ever since.
It has been just a train wreck.
A
fun one. But train wrecks can be entertaining.
People like the train wreck. Cars going everywhere.
Yep.
Body parts flying all over. It's fun.
And the funny thing is, it's week after week after week. I think I've only two shows, maybe, over the period.
What, are you calling this a week show? Calling this a week show? What?
No. I'm saying there's only one or two shows that I've missed.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. You've only – I think there were two shows that you missed. That was it.
One was when I lost my one kid.
One was graduation, and the other one was not-so-graduation.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm waiting for a miracle cure for migraines, and then I'll be here a lot more.
Yep.
Well, you better come up with it. I keep a spreadsheet here, Gar. You think you've been here a lot less than you've really been here. And you've been here on nights that you weren't even able to do a show the next night.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, last week I had to postpone. I had to do a ball show.
Well,
it was a fun ball show, but so
it was.
But I made it here the night before, and then Calamity hit the day right after. And I was like,
well, you
oh,
called
my,
in one night.
Head.
You were sick as hell. I don't know why you called, but I'm glad you did.
I don't know.
You were
I
sick as hell.
Know.
That's being a trooper, man.
I don't know what's going on. I'm rolling with the punches every day. That's all I can say.
That's all we all can do.
Maybe that's why,
you know?
Maybe that's why you're always black and blue. You got to be careful of that.
Yeah.
I know.
You know. You might
want to exactly.
You might want to duck once in a while.
I wish I could. Quack, quack. I would if I could.
Crazy good stuff coming up in the future. Dave, your scheduling is incredible. We're going to have a Flintstone weekend.
We are having a Flintstone weekend coming up. Yes, we are.
Yep.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I'm already scheming for it.
Oh, ho, ho, ho.
I bet you are. Sound
okay.
Bite heaven for Dale on that show.
Yeah. So, Dave, yeah. Yeah, maybe we better do 2 2-hour shows.
That voice actor has done a lot of work.
What's interesting is I was able to find a Radio Mystery Theater that had Alan Reed did two of them. But this one, he actually did two different parts in it. So I thought that was pretty cool.
So it's great. We're going to have Mel Blanc, you know, Barney, B. Benaderet,
yeah.
Betty. Jean Vanderpil, she's Wilma, and then of course Alan Reed, Fred. So we got all the main characters,
yep. And they're all in good roles because B. Benaderet was the husband on Granby's Green Acres, or the wife on Granby's Green Acres, and Wilma, she was the second wife on the radio Fathers Knows Best, so that was one featuring her as well. And then, of course, Mel Blanc's Fix-It Shop, as well, and then the Mystery Theater that had Alan Reed in it. So, that really fun show, a weekend coming up with that one, yeah.
That'll be in April.
Yep.
Dang.
Yeah.
Good times. Yeah, they were late. I couldn't read it, so this is my first real look at what you've planned there. Good stuff.
The radio void actors, man, they were busy people. They were all over the place.
Well, that was
Peter
and people
so
that were doing
shows.
voice and radio, man. Once cartoons took off in the 60s, that was good work for them.
Yeah.
Yes.
Think of everybody that was doing voice work at the time. You know, you still had I was going to say Blanton Collier. Bud Collier.
I missed his cartoon.
Yeah.
Well, I missed his cartoon, yeah.
Yeah, it was called the Cleveland Browns cartoon. no, you know, he was still in there,
Awesome.
And then you had everybody.
Yeah, Dawes Butler all over the place. You know,
yep.
You had Paul Frees all over the place.
That story about Orson Welles getting an ambulance was insane.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't illegal then. You could hire an ambulance.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's illegal. I'm sure it's illegal now, but it wasn't illegal then.
Right.
That's why I want to buy one.
Yeah, well, you can buy a hearse. You can buy an ambulance. You know?
Either an ambulance or a hearse. You know, it's got to be like a Ghostbusters mobile, but I prefer a hearse.
They've got this one crazy hearse that it's like the entire back of it is almost like all glass, so you can see what's in the back. But, oh, what beautiful hearses back when. And they had fins, little fin car stuff going on.
There's one like that in, what is it, the one with Vincent Price, Peter Lorre, Boris Karloff, and Basil Rathbone. Dave, you know which one I'm talking about.
Comedy of Terrors.
Comedy of Terrors has one of those old-time horse-drawn hearses that
Horse-drawn,
the glass. And they're very ornate, too, you know. They're really something else.
Yeah, go ahead.
I may be in the country, but we can't have horses on our street, so I have to get the, you know, the gas-powered kind, a hearse.
Yeah. You can't have, is it against the law there to have a horse on the street?
You probably don't want to have, it's like being in a suburb, dude. You can't have horses and having them do horse things on the street.
Oh, cleanup patrol, right.
And, keeping them in your yard, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. And there's a stupid homeowners association here, too, so.
Oh, that too, yeah.
If they catch you smiling on your property, I think they have a problem with that.
Well, they're good. They have pluses and minuses. They're good and they're bad.
Those people are happy. We've got to put a stop to it.
Exactly.
You ever get the feeling some people are just like that?
Yeah.
You guys are the opposite. You know, you like to make people happy and make them laugh or make them entertained and teach them a few things and share a few
things.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
no, I'm a jackass.
I blame coffee for my optimism.
Ask around.
I blame coffee for my optimism. If it can so be blamed.
I blame coffee on keeping me awake. Alive sometimes. I used to not be able to drink coffee. I would be I would turn into Daffy Duck. Woohoo, woohoo. I'd be bouncing off the ceilings. Now I need it to function.
Yeah.
I had a very low tolerance to caffeine at one time. I must have built up a resistance or something.
I remember I was working at a theater. I was about 17 years old, and I was working in a theater, and I would take caffeine pills. And, buddy, I was a whirlwind.
Everything was clean, every hour, every minute of
everything. Oh, man.
Meanwhile,
yeah,
you can hear the Benny Hill music with Gar running around.
Oh, yeah. My boss really enjoyed my enthusiasms. As an usher, it didn't show up in my paycheck, but, I was one of the better ushers. Like, watch that guy clean an auditorium. My goodness.
Sometimes when you're a good employee, you get other perks, so, you know what I mean? Back in those days.
Not in that job. that job, but yeah.
No, like free movies for your friends or any of that kind of stuff?
No, I got free movies because I could go up there and watch. I think we got free soda pop. And
so you got
caffeine pills and then soda pop on a young kid. Yeah, that's not good.
There you go. Miss half the movie in the restroom now.
I was bouncing all over the place, yeah.
With all that coffee.
And it's weird. Now I'm remembering that movie theater changed hands management-wise like three different times. It was really weird. It finally ended up in AMC theater, and then I left.
We still have a couple out here that have the old marquee, and they are so cool. They're like time capsules.
Wow.
Not many, but there's still a few, handful.
Yeah.
And then I wonder if, during that pandemic, the drive-ins kind of jumped up in popularity. I wonder if that's going to stay.
Oh,
drive-ins were making
a
resurgence. They were making a resurgence during the pandemic.
When was the last time you guys physically went to a theater and sat down and watched a movie?
I can't. In a movie theater? It's been years for me now.
Yeah,
we have a little the theater around here had like a marquee like Dale was talking about, and it's $5 first run movies even, and I've been there about three or four times in the last year and a half.
God, 10 years for me.
There was a novelty. I don't know if it was everywhere, but there was a novelty here in Florida in the 80s where they took and they showed a movie, a currently released film for theaters. They would show the movie, but they had a restaurant surround. So you'd go in and you could order a limited menu, but it was beer And what was it called? It was something, can't remember the name of it, but you could get beer and wine and spirits and stuff like that, and a limited menu. Sit down at a table and watch a current film.
That's kind of cool. We had in Little Italy, Dave, over here, there was a place called the New Mayfield Repertory Theater during the 70s when I was growing up and into the 80s. And it was this really old theater, and it had little it was almost like a student's desk, a little area and they sold, you could drink beer in the theater. But mm-hmm. what was really cool and got me going there like frequently for a period is they had a run of showing all the great like silent films, and I got to see on 16mm, you know, Metropolis, mm-hmm. Phantom of the Opera, Hunchback of Notre Dame, Nosferatu. I got to see them all in this theater. It was great seeing all the classic silent films, early Chaney, Senior Man, good stuff.
I remember the name of it was called. It was called the Draft House Theater, so you could get beer on tap there.
Yeah.
The only problem with that would be if you were an usher, like you said, it was a theater and they were serving beer. Would be
uh-huh.
the ushers would have to clean up all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, your mop would be busy. I guarantee. No matter how nice your crowd is, accidents are going to happen with beer. For some reason.
I think
no one knows why.
The biggest thing would be you would get a lot of people that would get in there that should not be getting beer, and they'd be getting beer, like underage. And the statute of limitations is over, but I know I was underage, and I went there and got beer while I was watching it. I was like,
good man.
You want a beer? Yeah, let's get a beer.
True confessions. Yeah. Your life of crime. You and your life of crime.
I was such a social vagrant. Draft House Theater and Pub, I think it was. But it was weird because they had it in a semicircle, all the tables, and in the middle was a blank wall of curtains, and they were showing a film. So that was kind of a neat thing. But my theater going days died with the last release of a Batman movie where some guy opened fire in the theater. I was like, yeah, I'm done. I'm not going. Sorry. There's just too much craziness out there. There is no need for that.
Nah.
Oh, my gosh.
We grew up, we didn't have to worry about crazy stuff like that.
Wait, no, you know, if you're demented, stay home. Thanks. You know, it's okay.
Yeah. well, it was okay
you know?
To take them somewhere, you know, and keep them there for a while.
Well, we had houses, we had places to send them.
Yeah.
I always get that confused with Nixon and Reagan, because I thought it was Nixon, but other information says it was Reagan that got rid of the United States mental wards, if they were, whatever you're going. There are still state houses, and I think they're really bad.
Yeah, I don't know.
I guess. I don't know. No first-hand view on that. I don't want
to. You got to really scrutinize the people you hire anymore, especially for stuff like that. With special needs persons, you got to really scrutinize the people you hire. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you do. You don't know what's going on. Well, like the guy that showed up. Now, for me, and this is because I'm old, you know, a guy goes into a theater with green hair. I'm like, watch that guy. You know, I'm bigger than anything. He pulled out an Uzi and mowed people down or.
Yeah, if it's green hair alone, that doesn't bother me. But if like their eyes are all wide and like spacey, then maybe I'd worry.
He's got that rabbit look to him, like, what's going to happen? Back when we were growing up, people didn't have green hair or purple or off colors that are not natural. I don't know if they got that from that UFO program with the girls with purple hair. I don't know where they got that from. What's that? Purple hair.
It started in the 80s, the multicolored hair stuff. It was a punk thing, I think, at first, wasn't it?
Yeah, Yeah, it sounds right. Yeah, it was weird.
Yeah.
About you, Dave? No. Have you dyed your hair blue lately?
Dave?
Dave?
Dave.
Dave's not here.
Dave.
I hope he didn't fall asleep. No, Dave, I guess.
His mic just shut off and turned back on. Are you there now? Dave?
Is your mute button pressed there, Dave?
Yeah, hold on. Let me try to turn him off and turn on. Are you back yet, Chief? Nope. Well,
no,
we're Dave
here. We are Dave. Wow, let's use that as a countdown to say adios for this Friday. How about that?
Sure. Well, that means we just got to bring out the great one, the Schnozola, Jimmy Durant.
Good night. Good
night, Gar. Good night, Dave. Good night, CW.
Good night.
Meh. That was the goat, I think. Hasta la vista.
We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo.
Hasta mañana.
Horrible, what we the same, and it could think it do. Good night. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash.
Do you mind turning off the radio?